On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with Rome Vajaro about his experience with Wikipedia harassment.
So all I was trying to do was really just change the lead section, even just giving him his proper credentials academically, right? Cambridge University refers to him as a biologist. There's so many scientific publications that refer to him as a biologist.
Well, that's absurd. He has dozens and dozens of scholarly peer-reviewed papers in scientific journals. I think he's published in Nature, if I remember correctly. And take line 2 from the Wikipedia entry. From 1967 to 1973, he was a biochemist and cell biologist at Cambridge University. Well, what happened after that? He stopped being a biochemist? He stopped being a biologist? It's just absurd.
It's like something from a Monty Python movie.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, we're going to dig into a topic that I've touched on a couple of times in the last few months. It has to do with the controversy on Wikipedia over the bio page of Dr. Rupert Sheldrick. And of course, it's about the larger problem with Wikipedia and the strong bias that it shows in certain areas. Now, our guest for this show, Rome Vajaro, is someone who's been on the front lines of this battle and provides a very interesting perspective on exactly, well, I guess there's no other way of saying it, how bad things really are. So I thought before getting to this interview with Rome, I would play a clip from Dr. Rupert Sheldrick in an interview he gave to the BBC, because I think he sums up the situation quite nicely and provides a little lead in to what's going on. And then we'll get right to the interview. Here's that clip.
For many, Wikipedia, the collaborative online encyclopedia, is the first place to go looking for someone or something. But can you rely on it? Well, not really, says scientist Rupert Sheldrick. He came in to explain.
Wikipedia is open to anyone to edit, and it's a wonderful idea. But because it's so widely used, it makes it attractive to people with an agenda to push their own agenda by becoming editors. And I drew attention to a group called Guerrilla Skeptics on Wikipedia in a blog that I wrote in the summer, a group of people who have a very strong agenda. They want to prove that things like telepathy, alternative and complementary medicine and so on are rubbish. Well, they don't want to prove it. They believe that, and they want everyone else to believe it. So I drew attention to their activities. And a few days later, the Wikipedia page on me was targeted by a group of skeptics. Now, I can't prove that they're part of that organization because people operate anonymously. And so what's happened to me since then is that these people, as it were, captured my biography, which I've never edited myself. That's not what you do on Wikipedia. But they've now systematically gone through the biography, quoting everything bad that anyone's ever said about me for the last 30 years, deleting anything good that anyone's said about me, and then rewriting my career. For example, I was a fellow of Clare College, Cambridge, and a director of studies at Cambridge. That's been changed to I worked for a while as a postdoc at Cambridge. So basically, a group of dedicated, ideologically motivated people have not just my page. I mean, if it was just me, I wouldn't be so worried. It's a systematic attempt to distort hundreds of pages on Wikipedia.
Because your research pursues the idea that mind is more than the physical, that people have beliefs, they might have something called soul, there is telepathy, for example, which needs to be explored. Things are not purely material in the way that humans experience them. And these people don't like that. They think it should be materialism and that's it.
That's it. They're committed materialists. And materialism as a philosophy is the belief that the mind is nothing but the brain, the activity of the brain. So things like telepathy or alternative medicine are impossible.
Therefore, or even belief in God?
Oh, yes. Most of them are militant atheists. I think that's really where the emotional impetus comes from for many of them. They're kind of proselytizing atheists. They think that phenomena like telepathy are impossible. I'm a scientist, and I think that we should investigate them. I've done studies on dogs that know when their owners are coming home, which I think is telepathic in many cases. But you see, that from the point of view of the guerrilla skeptics, anyone who investigates these phenomena that they don't like with is doing pseudoscience.
If you change things back, they, as you say, they've changed your biography, so you change it back to what it was, then what happens?
There's been a series of people who've gone in to edit the page who think that this is wrong, and they've tried to restore a balance. If they change it back, within seconds, the skeptic types revert it. It's called reversion, because they have an automatic alert. If any change is made on the site, they're immediately notified. And then if someone changes it back again, if someone reverts things three times in a day, they can be banned for, it's called an editing war. They've got about five people banned so far. So this is the problem. I mean, it's not confined to these skeptic groups. There are other groups on different parts of Wikipedia who are editing it for their own ends.
Such as?
Well, the Oxford University Internet Research Unit published a list recently of the top editing wars on Wikipedia, and the top 10 sites where there's editing wars and contested editing concern climate change, God, Jesus Christ, Muhammad, and homosexuality. And they differ from country to country. Most people who use Wikipedia think it's sort of fair and objective, and in some cases it is. I mean, if you're dealing with uncontroversial subjects, you know, like the age of Lincoln Cathedral or something, then it's probably very reliable. But in anything where there's a differing opinion, there's a tremendous temptation for people to try and capture it and use it to promote their agenda. So on my particular biography page, the Rupert Sheldrake page on Wikipedia, a superficial person just looking me up for the first time would get an extremely distorted view. If they persisted, they'd be able to correct the balance, but many of them might not persist.
Rupert Sheldrake, well, we're going to talk about the reliability of Wikipedia, and that's on the World Service Facebook page. Quite a lot of people also commenting on Sheldrake's research itself. We're actually going to take that up as an issue later, sometime next week.
So with that as a background, let's get right into the interview that I had with Rome Viharo. Today we welcome Rome Viharo to Skeptico. Rome is an entrepreneur and media consultant who, during the fall of 2013, found himself right in the middle of the Wikipedia war over Rupert Sheldrake's bio page. This is a topic I've touched on a little bit before, and I'm really glad to welcome Rome here so we can kind of fill in some of the backstory here, because it's really fascinating and it fits in with so many of the things we've talked about on this show. Rome, welcome to Skeptico. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Alex. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So, Rome, I will have just played for folks Dr. Sheldrake's recent interview on the BBC, where he does a pretty good job of outlining the situation and the capturing, as he calls it, of his bio page. Can you tell folks how you became involved in this project, how you first got interested, and then maybe a little bit about what happened?
Sure. So I became involved. I met Rupert Sheldrake about 1 year previously up in Northern California. I gave a TEDx talk. He saw it, and he just wanted to know if we could meet while he was in town. He just wanted some advice on his website and his social media properties. It's a very common question I'm asked. I'm a consultant for social media. So I met with him. I gave him kind of like the usual spiel that I give to most people. We met for about 30 minutes, and that was pretty much it. I'm assuming he was satisfied. I mean, nothing else kind of came of it. And he wound up sending me an email kind of out of the blue in August of this year asking for my advice about his Wikipedia problem. And at first I was a little skeptical. You know, a lot of people kind of look at Wikipedia sometimes as kind of like a vanity article or a way to kind of promote their ideas. And I at first wasn't sure what he was asking. And I personally kind of believe in Wikipedia. I believe in the kind of like the neutral point of view that the encyclopedia has to take. So at first I was a little uncomfortable, but then he explained that there were these editors that kind of went on to take over his page and they were bullying people off of it. And could I just take a look and just basically just give him some advice? So I went to his article page and I was actually personally offended by what I saw. when I did see a lot of the evidence of the bullying, of what was happening, there was a few editors on there. One editor, Vizak, kind of joined the site. It looked like just to edit Rubert's page. The comments, the way they would attack other editors on the page. I think there was like a number of editors who were actually kind of banned away from the page. And to me, it just seemed like something that I was just kind of disillusioned, right? That I was actually seeing this happen on Wikipedia and no one was doing anything about it.
Right. Let's back up for just a second and explain to folks who are not totally familiar with the inner workings of Wikipedia, because we all know what Wikipedia is, right? It's an online encyclopedia, and it uses the power of the group to edit these articles. So for most people who never have taken the time to become an editor or get involved with any editing, they kind of, I think, have this idea that the whole process just kind of works itself out in kind of a normal way like you would with a small group. And really, there's quite a complicated social structure that really is developed behind these Wikipedia pages. So tell people a little bit about how it's supposed to work, how you've seen it work in the past, and then what surprised you when you went to Sheldrick's page? Because I think you tell a great story there. You know, you're experienced in social media, and even as an experienced person who understands Wikipedia and has really been involved with some pretty sophisticated projects of Wikipedia, you were surprised. So I've kind of gone on and on. Tell us how it's supposed to work and then what you found in Sheldrick's page.
Well, listen, to be honest, I had my own idea about how it was supposed to work. I actually, previous to this, never went through, you know, the mediation process on Wikipedia before. I spoke about it, right, in my TED talk. I actually used the Wikipedia article of Israelis and Palestinians finding a consensus where politicians couldn't. So I had this idea about it, and of course I've, you know, read about it and kind of researched it, but myself, I actually never went through the process. But how it's supposed to work, I mean, Wikipedia does have a very large, often complex, confusing, sometimes even contradictory set of guidelines. And how it's supposed to happen is there's a voice that Wikipedia is written in, and it's the voice of neutrality. And for me, it's almost like how a journalist would write something, like a proper journalist, like from the New York Times or the Washington Post, not an opinion article, but like a reporter. Which is to simply, you kind of remove yourself to the best of your ability personally from the information on the article, and you simply state the facts, not the story, not the opinion, but just the facts. And on Wikipedia, the guidelines kind of guide editors how to approach this. Now, there's such a wide variety of different topics on Wikipedia, from politics, religion, philosophy, potentially very kind of contentious articles with different ideologies that kind of guard them. So Wikipedia does keep adding on new steps, new rules, right, of how to approach all these instances. And when you go into talk, what makes Wikipedia very difficult is how discussion actually is formatted on Wikipedia. It's not like a normal discussion forum that most people are used to. It's not like a Reddit, for example. It's not like most kind of BBSs. So even just having a discussion or leaving a comment can be very confusing. Like the first time people can leave a comment, and this actually happened to me when I went on the Sheldrick's page. They can put their comments in the wrong area. They might forget to put a signature. So the format of it is just inherently confusing. But the idea is that when you go on to edit an article, you familiarize yourself with the general guidelines of how Wikipedia operates, and you kind of follow them to the best of your ability. What's really interesting about Wikipedia is they have some very kind of forward-thinking rules and guidelines. One of them is if you believe that you have to break one of these rules or break one of these guidelines to make the page better, then break the rule. But they also have a lot of very kind of restricted rules, and what winds up happening is you have all these rules that editors, when they do have an agenda, they kind of game, right? They kind of game these circumstances, rules, or guidelines so they can kind of get their agenda on the page. And that's where things can get very confusing.
And the principal way that they do that is by banning anyone who disagrees with them. I mean, in simple terms,
yes.
That's what happens. You go through this protracted process of editing and then re-editing and controversy in this, but at the end of the day, within a very short period of time, you get banned, and that's what happened to you.
Yes, and it was such a disillusioning experience when it happened to me too, because I mean, I knew what I was walking into. I mean, I knew that there was editors on there that definitely had some kind of agenda. I mean, it was pretty clear. So I was expecting to get, you know, challenged and things like that. What happened to me is literally within the first 2 days that I was there, they tried to get me banned twice. And, you know, when I first came on too, I was just kind of sussing the situation out. I was just kind of orientating myself to the personalities in discussion, you know, to the process. I didn't like jump in 100%. I jumped in like 10% in the beginning. So I posted one or two comments about my concerns. And this one editor, Vizak, immediately came to my page, said I was, warned me that I was personally attacking editors on the page, and that could be cause for removing me from Wikipedia. And then the second day, Vizak found all this, I don't know, but Vizak went back to 2006 in the archives in Wikipedia and found links on Internet Archive of discussion activities that I participated in 2003, 2004, 2005, and said that I was trolling back then, and that therefore I'm trolling Wikipedia now. And posted my personal identity on the talk page, on Rupert's page, and on my own personal page on Wikipedia, which is just a complete violation of how Wikipedia works, the guidelines and the principles.
So your anonymity was destroyed. I mean, this is clearly a case of cyberbullying, of someone trying to use the internet and the power of social media to kind of attack someone and do them harm, because you have the ability or you have the right to disclose or not disclose who you are. You're an entrepreneur. You're a business person involved in social media. We can understand why you may or may not want to disclose that. You know what I think, though, we need to add to this, because people listening to this and they're trying to sort out, you know, oh, it's a big debate. It's a fight. There's two sides to it. No. What we have to add to this, Rome, is a little bit of context. Let's go through some of the changes that were so controversial to these folks who have captured, again, Rupert Sheldrake's page. These folks are very dogmatic skeptics. It's really a cover for atheism, and they're fundamentalist in that way. But let's go through some of the changes that were so controversial to them. And I'd start with the very first line in Sheldrake's page, and you sent me an email on this just the last couple of days, and it reads, Alfred Rupert Sheldrake is an English author, lecturer, researcher, and parapsychologist. Now, the change that you sought to make was, rather than leading with the fact that he's an author, to lead with the fact that he's a biologist, right? He's an English biologist.
Yes, exactly. So, and also too, it's me personally, right? I have no vested interest in promoting Rupert Sheldrake's ideas or his hypothesis, and I really don't know. Like, I can't say scientifically if they're valid or invalid, and that was never my arguments. I was never arguing like pro his ideas. My arguments were always just on the what's called the lead section, right, which is just describing the basic information about the man. Rupert Sheldrake is a biologist, author, and lecturer. So why I was so offended is, and this is the metadata on Wikipedia, is that these editors were basically abusing the metadata, the first sentence of the paragraph, to immediately frame Rupert Sheldrake in a light that, one, is just biographically not true, but in a way where he has no credibility just after the first sentence. So when I joined the page, what I found offensive was Rupert Sheldrake is a former biologist. Right. So I just found that like offensive. And I was like, where is the source that he's a former biologist? Where is the evidence of this? So all I was trying to do was really just change the lead section. Right. I never was arguing for his theories, how if they were valid or invalid. So even just giving him his proper credentials academically, right? Cambridge University refers to him as a biologist. There's so many scientific publications that refer to him as a biologist.
Well, that's absurd. He has dozens and dozens of scholarly, peer-reviewed papers in scientific journals. I think he's published in Nature, if I remember correctly. He's published in some of the most respected biology journals. And take line 2 from the Wikipedia entry. It's just unbelievable. From 1967 to 1973, he was a biochemist and cell biologist at Cambridge University. Well, what happened after that? He stopped being a biochemist? He stopped being a biologist? It's just absurd.
It's like something from a Monty Python movie. That was inherently where I was kind of focusing my arguments, just in kind of the lead section. I created a sandbox. And the thing is, you know, I was making this argument, but so were a lot of other people. Like, I personally do not identify myself as like a pro-Sheldrake supporter in the sense there was, Craig Wheeler was involved in the page, and he writes a blog about psi and telepathy and things like this. So he was kind of arguing from that perspective. So, but even the people who were, you know, arguing from that perspective, no one had any problem with having any criticisms of Rupert Sheldrake on the page, right? So there's a number of scientists that have said very critical things about him. They referred to his work as pseudoscience and all these things. No one was arguing against that. Everyone wanted that on the page. It's an encyclopedia. It's notable. It should be there.
Well, hold on a minute. I mean, maybe it's notable, maybe it's not notable. There's a lot of controversy about that. I think one of the things that you bring to this discussion, the perspective that you bring, is as a media consultant and as someone, as you explain your story, who is neutral on the topic. So I can get pretty heated if we want to talk about pseudoscience, but so I don't want to go there necessarily. I want to stick to what you were just saying about the real story here is about Wikipedia. And about how it has been rigged, how the game has been gamed by these folks, and how it's consistent. It's not just about Sheldrake. I mean, the broader question that we have to ask ourselves when we dig into it is, what does this say about science? Because I think one of the ongoing debates we have on this show and with forward-thinking scientists is, we have this perception sometimes because the internet does have this long tail and it does allow more voices and more variety of voices. We have this sense, I think, sometimes that things are getting better, that a paradigm change is coming, that we're more open to new ideas. And I think when we run into something like this, we have to acknowledge that in a lot of ways, science is worse than it was, that power through the internet has been consolidated in some respects into the hands of a few people like this who can kind of rig the game. So let's talk about what this might mean for science or what the broader implications of this are.
I'm not sure how much it affects science, how much it affects knowledge.
Just to kind of jump in here, I didn't say how does it affect science. I say what does it say about science? What does it say about our perception that we have that the internet is going to somehow save us, liberate us from the narrowed perspective that science, materialism sometimes gives us? It's kind of a rhetorical question. It's to me, it says that, you know, science isn't as well off as it seems. And Sheldrake's, you know, book, Science Set Free, his latest book, is really that it's an extension of that condemnation of science and science's inability to kind of get out of its own mess and pull itself up from its bootstraps.
I see what you mean now. So I actually agree with that. I wouldn't call it science. I would call it just philosophy, right? There's this philosophy of scientific materialism. It's referred to as scientism, physicalism. It draws from a lot of knowledge that science provides, but it is a philosophy. And I think what this does say is that there is a bias of this philosophy. And I do believe it's entrenched in Wikipedia, right? My own personal experience actually really kind of provided that to me, right? Where you have this really kind of rigid philosophical bias that takes science, kind of treats it like a fundamentalist religious person would treat their religion, right? How they would treat Christianity, where it's just, we're right. We can break any rules that we want because we're right anyway. It doesn't matter. And anybody who disagrees with this, not only are they wrong as people, but they're ignorant, they're stupid, we can abuse them. That is a pattern. And I have seen that happen a lot on Wikipedia. And in addition to that, you know, I was exposed on Wikipedia, me personally, right? I mean, they outed me as a person, and now they have created this hit piece on me on Rational Wiki.
Right.
And I'm sure you're familiar with Rational Wiki,
right,
which it's everything but rational, right? And basically you have, and there's probably isn't that many editors involved in Rational Wiki, but they're these really aggravated people who kind of adhere to this kind of specific worldview, and they use it to basically abuse people. And there's this very abusive, libelous piece on me on Rational Wiki right now, which it shows up really high in search. It's harmful to me professionally. And what it says to me is, if this, you know, philosophy or however it's referred to, but these people who are part of this, I don't even know what to call it, Alex. Is it a skeptical movement? Are they, you know, are they atheists? I have no idea. But if they're simply promoting science, which is based on empiricism, logic, rationality, why do they need to do all these dirty tricks to get their point across? Why do they need to, you know, abuse people? Why do they need to defame people to make their point?
Well, I think that's really kind of the more interesting issues. And I think we can kind of sit on the sidelines and go, oh my gosh, isn't this horrible? And, you know, won't things ever get better? And these crazy skeptics. The thing I always point out to people is the skeptics, the dogmatic skeptics, the fundamentalist atheists, who these people represent, are really the tip of the spear for scientism. We always want to, you know, like you did, and say, well, it's really not a problem with science, is it? It's a problem with scientific materialism. It's a philosophical issue. No, forget it. It's about science. If we're going to talk in general terms, science media has been completely co-opted by this point of view. And the reason I'd come back and say it's the tip of the spear is you don't see scientists rushing to the aid of Rupert Sheldrick. Just on principle, saying, hey, this is a colleague of ours. This guy is clearly a biologist. He's a Cambridge fellow. You know, he's all these things. We need to defend this. No, they sit on their hands and silently cheer. Or some of them sit on their hands and hope that the arrow doesn't point to them next. So it's really akin to what you were talking about with religious fundamentalism. So, you know, back when they were bombing abortion clinics, you know, of course there was an outcry of stop the violence from other Christians. But there wasn't too much of an outcry, right? There's a lot of sympathy, too, for, well, we can certainly understand how upset people are by all those babies dying, you know? So these frontline soldiers, these tip of the spear of a ideological debate, I think we have to be careful when we kind of separate them and bifurcate and say, well, they don't really represent science. Yeah, I think they do. They do form a pretty good representation of the crazy scientific materialism that really grips science as we know it right now. I don't see any relief from that.
I hope you're wrong about that. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, I definitely see it as a problem, like especially going through this whole process. I mean, listen, me personally, I love science, right? I've loved science since I was a kid. When I was in third, fourth grade, I was devouring books on astronomy, right? So there's this part of me that loves science as a process and as a way to sure. kind of develop knowledge, right? So maybe when I hear you say that word science, that's what I'm, you know, I'm assuming you mean how I understand science. I definitely see this as a huge problem, though. I mean, there is this mindset. Personally, I think it's groupthink, right? I don't know if you're familiar what groupthink is, or if your listeners are. But groupthink is a term that's used in psychology, and groupthink can happen in any place where groups of people form. Right? It's irrespective of what the beliefs of that group are, and how groupthink forms is people inside that group are afraid to address conflict inside that group. And because they are afraid to address conflict inside that group, they begin to form this kind of shared language. And the shared language really is about avoiding these conflicts within the group. And from that, from groupthink, you'll get delusion. You know, you'll get, of course, a lot of like irrationality. That's personally what I see happening, right? I see that there's groupthink happening. And because it is science, it's potentially institutionalized groupthink. Right. But you would we find this in government, or we would find this in huge corporations. Right. I'm in my industry. right? I'm in the media and technology space, and I've had a horrible groupthink experiences with companies and startups. That's what I personally think this is. I don't think it's like a conspiracy in the sense that people are consciously putting together strategies of how to do this. I think it is a, if it is a conspiracy, it would be like a completely unconscious conspiracy, right? And to avoid conflict within the group. And when you begin to engage in an argument with people who have this kind of groupthink process happening, when you engage in an argument and you begin to conflict with their ideas that they're avoiding inside of their group, you will get a very kind of violent reaction, because they're not just defending themselves or their own personal points of view. They're actually defending the paradigm of the group, right? They're protecting the paradigm of the group. So that's personally how I interpret it. What is really interesting in this is, you know, personally, and you and I spoke once before, personally, I'm an agnostic, right? So I don't really have, at least I don't think I do. I don't really have an ideology on one side or the other. And I come from I don't know if you know who Robert Anton Wilson was, but he was an author. And so I kind of come from the Robert Anton Wilson school, which is, I'm not just agnostic about religion, I'm agnostic about everything. And what's really interesting when you take an agnostic approach and you're arguing or you engage in a debate with someone who is on one extreme or the other, they really don't know what to make of you, because you're not really taking a side. And when you have this kind of agnostic approach where you're just coming from this place of, you know, hey, I'm kind of in the middle, it's kind of unknown, I don't really have the answers, I'm not arguing for the answers, it's really easy to expose where people who are really,
certain.
Yeah, who are really certain, it's really easy to expose their contradictions.
Well, I might edit some of this out because I don't want to get off on this whole sidetrack. But yeah, I don't think there's any such thing as an agnostic. We all lay our head down on the pillow at night and wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and have those fundamental existential questions, and we answer them one way or another, and the way we answer them is who we are. So I don't believe in agnosticism. I just don't think it exists. We live our life. The way we live our life is the answer for what we believe. And again, this is kind of out of the context of this show. But for me, I'm not about belief. I'm just about following the evidence, following the data. And I don't know what the real answer is. I know that the paradigm of scientific materialism, the paradigm of you are just a biological robot and that consciousness is an illusion, I know that's been falsified. The data that we have overwhelmingly suggest that that's the case. So, you know, what that means in terms of what somebody wants to label themselves or something like that, I don't know. But let me get off of that aside and maybe respond to this, and this is where I'd like to pick it up. I'd say, so, Rome, maybe it is a groupthink thing, and I'm open to that. But I also have a sense that it's really about culture, and it's about a culture war. It's really interesting, you know, because when you really try and pin down these groups, it's fascinating, because what are they really about? They're about defending the status quo. They're about maintaining things the way they are. And it's a weird position to be in. And they're also about maintaining, from what I can tell, this strange balance between the idiocy of religion and the craziness of materialistic science. I mean, they just don't want things to change in this balance. And that's why, you know, like you mentioned cold fusion a minute ago. Why the heck would anyone be against cold fusion? Why would a skeptic, quote unquote skeptic, have even an opinion on that? I mean, it doesn't seem to be a culture war issue, but it is a culture war issue if we look at it through this lens that I'm talking about, of defending the status quo, defending things as they currently exist. And if we look at it and we come away and we say, maybe that is it, then I think you have to be more open to the conspiratorial aspect of it. And I don't want to go too far in that, but I will say that I don't think conspiracies work the way that people generally think they work. It's not like a group of guys in a back, smoky, cigar-filled room making decisions about how to rule the world. It's just about sitting back and seeing how the game is played and giving a little wink and a nod here and a little nudge there, cutting the legs out of this guy over here and promoting this guy a little bit more over here. And you basically just let the system run its course and just make these little tweaks, and you can get the outcome that you want. That's what I think's going on.
Well, listen, in that light, there was definitely a conspiracy to get me banned off of Wikipedia. There's no question about that. There's actually a lot of evidence compiled for that. And to your other point, you know, I was really putting forward a lot of very kind of strong arguments on Rubert's page. And these arguments, I think it was the first time that the editors were really kind of confronted with really kind of strong arguments. And although they banned me, right, I was banned off of Wikipedia October 17th. My arguments are still continuing, right? There's a number of editors who have come in and have now picked up these arguments. And his page has gotten a lot better because of it, right? Not to how I would think it should be personally, but there has been a lot of very kind of positive changes. And then to your point, I think we're kind of using conspiracy and groupthink probably as interchangeable words, right? I definitely think that in any kind of situation where any group kind of feels threatened, they're going to try to advance their ideas or their agenda or their protocols however they can. And most people will lie, ban someone, censor someone, maybe even kill someone to forward any idea that they believe is true. And when you attack an idea that someone believes is true and they're really invested in that idea, I think what's going on in their minds is it's as if you are physically attacking them. And if their idea is no longer true, it means that they're dead almost, right? So people have this really kind of protective sense of what they believe to be true. And I agree, people will plot and strategize defending their ideas as if they were defending their own lives. So just like, you know, in World War II, you had the Nazis and the Americans. They were coming up with all kinds of battle plans and strategies to protect both of their sides in the conflict. That would be a similar analogy. In this case, it's just a war of ideas, and people will definitely do whatever they can to protect those ideas. That's what I think was really awesome about what happened to me on Wikipedia is because the case is so clear, right? I mean, because everything is stored on Wikipedia, I have evidence. I have actual physical evidence of the discussions they were having about me. I have links to where they are literally talking about getting me banned off the page, and they're all gathering one section, and they're using these links that are, you know, they go back to 2004, and they're using these links as evidence of me trolling on Wikipedia in 2013, which is really, it's absurd.
Right. Every 9 years, you show up to troll. Well, what does this potentially do for you, Rome? Because it's interesting, the first time we talked, you were telling me about some of the ideas you had, coincidentally, really, because they weren't connected at the time to this, but ideas that you have for engineering other kind of social interaction tools and products that transcend some of these or help us transcend some of these problems. Tell us a little bit about that. And might this be a blessing in disguise and an impetus for you to even drive some of that stuff further?
Absolutely. I am so passionate about this subject. I have actually been developing a platform for about 10 years now. It's actually in production right now. The first iteration hopefully is going to be ready in a couple weeks. In programmer time, that could be 2 months. But I've developed a collective editing platform that can sort massive, large-scale discussions by rational consensus, personal commentary, and open questions. And how it sorts the discussions will allow the editors or the participants in those discussions various editing powers. So I am so passionate about this. This is why I was so interested in going on Rubert's page, right? I actually wanted to see how this process gets played out when you have a very kind of conflicting ideological based article, how it kind of works itself out on Wikipedia. I believe that collective editing platforms like Wikipedia, I look at Wikipedia as a way, is almost like a precursor. I think it's the future. I think collective editing platforms are going to evolve to where governments will be using collective editing platforms, corporations, people, businesses, because it does enable collective intelligence itself, does enable the most kind of refined, the most honest, the most rational idea to kind of form from a collective.
But why would we want that if we're in government or if we're in an institution that exerts a certain power or control over an issue or topic? Why would we want that?
Well, for that very reason, what you just said. A collective editing platform, by its very nature, it's an open process. So it has the kind of like the spirit of democracy, but it doesn't have the flaws. It doesn't have the mathematical flaws of voting.
Well, I certainly love and admire your idealism, and I can only hope that you succeed in that effort, but I'm skeptical.
Well, listen, I'm skeptical too. That's also too why this is so perplexing, because I think, like you just said, I'm skeptical. Skepticism is a very healthy attitude.
Great. Well, I'll certainly be cheering you on at the very least. Rome Viero, thank you so much for joining me, and best of luck with that work.
Oh, thank you so much, Alex. I really appreciate you having me come on and letting me tell my side of the story. And if I could just finish this with one thing. The reason why I appreciate this so much is, as you know, they are personally attacking me right now as Rome Viero on the internet. And it has been a very emotional experience for me having to go through cyberbullying on Wikipedia. And I just want to end with, what is happening on Wikipedia, without a question, is cyberbullying. Cyberbullying, there are laws against cyberbullying, and I believe that has to stop. So I really thank you for letting me tell my side of the story.
Well, I thank you for, you know, sticking your neck out and persisting. And I will tell folks that the genuineness that you're conveying, I can vouch for, because before this really spun out of control, you and I talked, and you were coming at this from purely a genuine need to fix a problem that you saw as a fair-minded person, and you really got sucked into this vortex without being someone who is going into it trying to pick a fight. And I also have to admire your persistence, because you didn't back down, you know, and we can't really back down from bullies. It just doesn't work. And in this case, I don't know, and I don't think you know, what you're going to have to go through to get to the other side. But I do think you're going to have to get to the other side. There's no way to back out now.
No, exactly. There's no way to back out now. And also, if you wouldn't mind, too, can I just give you a little update on what's happening, too?
Of course.
I am going to be putting my case and everything up online. It should be ready, hopefully, in a couple of days. If I can leave the web address, would you mind?
Sure. No, go ahead. And I'll also link up to it in the show notes, Roman, and we'll of course point people to that website and the links to the other relevant links that we've talked about in this show. And I do hope people get involved and follow this. Okay, so thanks again, Rome.
All right, Alex, thank you so much.
Thanks again to Rome Viero for joining me today on Skeptico. I have a couple of questions to tee up for this interview, but before I get there, let me update you on Rome's webpage. It's at WikipediaWeHaveAProblem.com. It's a pretty long URL, but you'll get there if you Google it. And I'll also, of course, have a link in the show notes. On his website, he really goes into a lot of depth, provides a lot of background. As you just heard in this interview, he's a level-headed guy. He's pretty balanced in his approach. So it really does provide a good case study for really looking at Wikipedia. So here are a couple of questions that are kicking around for me. Number one, what does this say about science? And I know I keep saying science and people go, well, it's not really science. Science means this or science means that. But I tend to disagree. I think this situation really speaks to the larger problem with the way science is applied. And I think, as I said in the show, the lack of support for Sheldrick in a situation where the scientist should obviously be supported by his peers speaks loudly and clearly that this is a problem with science in general. But maybe you disagree. I'd like to hear your opinion. And the second question, is this whole process, this process of Wikipedia, we have a problem, this process of exposing this this grossly unfair bias at Wikipedia? Is it, as it was in the case of the TED censorship of Rupert Sheldrake, is it really a blessing in disguise? So those are a couple of questions, quasi-questions, but at least starting points for a conversation. Of course, the place to pick up that conversation thread and take it forward is at the Skeptico website at Skeptiko. Don't forget to spell Skeptico with a K-O at the end. And at the website, you'll find a link to our forum where the conversation will continue. You can also leave a comment right there on the website, or jump on over to Facebook and leave me a note there, or send me an email. While you're at the Skeptico website, be sure to check out all of our previous shows, over 200 of them and growing. And be sure to subscribe through iTunes. All that stuff is free, as are the transcripts, as is everything else on the site. So please do check it out and share it as much as you feel appropriate. I have a number of interesting shows coming up. The next one is going to be a real, I'm not sure what adjective to use. It's just going to be a real, real interesting show. But I don't want to tip my hand too much on that. You'll have to stick around for that. Do take care, and bye for now.